Welcome to Red Meat, a collection of the tastiest tidbits from Odyssey's conservative news talk radio stations across the country, a place where we're not afraid to dig in. Today, we're bringing you the latest on immigration, the crackdown on illegals across the country, and on illegality in Washington, D.C., with interviews from border czar Tom Homan. That one is especially feisty. Plus, Senator Ted Cruz, and more. Later on, we'll discuss whether Trump is always right. But let's kick things off with Florida's Lieutenant Governor Jay Collins with Greg Cassidy on the Bob Rose Show.
We've got illegal immigration, clearly, in Florida. It's an issue like everywhere else. What's the status, and I guess especially alligator Alcatraz, what's the status there?
Yeah, no, I appreciate you asking that, Bob. Obviously, you know, this is something that has been at the forefront of the American political discussion. The American people have been incredibly clear. President Trump has pushed down to the states, expecting them to lead, and here we've stood up and stood beside the president. Governor Ron DeSantis has pushed every law enforcement agency to step in line. We have more 287G agreements than anybody else. And of course, as is predictable, the liberal left has gone out, attacked things like alligator Alcatraz. They tried to use some federal environmental survey as a reason to pull it aside and put it on mothballs, but we knew that was going to happen. We knew we would win, and the court system came through. There's a complete stay, meaning Alligator Alcatraz is back in business. It is up and running, as is Deportation Depot. And I hear there's talk about the Panhandle Pokey coming up as well, because we're going to keep pushing. We're going to keep leading, because that's what Florida does.
What about removing the mandate for the COVID vaccine? You know, I was on vacation, yet I still saw a couple of headlines like it was a big deal. And I said, mandate means to force it. Why would people be against removing a mandate?
You know, Bob, this is so frustrating that we continue to get lost in the conversation from the liberal left. They go out there, they do cheetah flips and bend their back and get all stressed out. Look, if you want to get your COVID vaccination, feel free to get your COVID vaccination. But we're going to stand up for parental rights. We absolutely, unequivocally believe that parents should have the say when it comes to things like immunizations. This is vital. If you don't want to follow the regular schedule, you should have some flexibility in how you want to do that. I mean, my wife and I, we did the same thing. When it comes to COVID, we did not vaccinate our kids for COVID because we knew there wasn't a risk factor. Florida led in that issue. Governor DeSantis stood alone, and then the nation started to get behind him. So, yes, we extended it for one more year this year through some legislation that I ran, but we got to fight for this. And I'm proud of the fact that, again, we're focused on parental rights and doing what's right, not what's easy.
I was reading an interview, I think you do, with some folks out of Pensacola, the ABC affiliate up there, and mm-hmm. and the headline talks about you're going to transform Florida, which I get that, but also redefine Lieutenant Governor role. Tell me about that.
Well, you know, I think historically, when you look at the Lieutenant Governor role, it hasn't always had very specific responsibilities. I think you have to step up and lead from the front. When I look back to my time in the military, you know, your number two person, whether it was your XO, your DCO, whatever else, had very specific criteria, things they were responsible for to help keep, in my case, the governor, and in the military case, the commander, on the right side of issues, aware of issues, but also had responsibilities of their own to help keep the men and women in their care safe and moving in the right direction. I think that's what we have to do. Now, that's not saying there's anything that anyone's done wrong behind us. Jeanette was incredible. What an amazing Republican leader, stood up for the right issues, and she is doing absolutely amazing things in FIU. But I think it's time, and I think Floridians want to see that on the ground, lead from the front, do things the Floridian way, the American way, on the ground. And it's important that people understand that we got their back. If it means we have to be up front, lead from the front, and do things ourselves sometimes, well, then we're going to do that. That messaging, that follow through, and that leadership is truly important.
Well, I mean, look, you being a guy, Green Beret, Special Forces, lost a leg and then still requalified as a deployable Green Beret. I mean, your story is phenomenal even before you got into politics, and we appreciate you, and we appreciate that. But from a military perspective, what's your thoughts on this idea of calling it the Department of War?
Well, you know, Bob, one correction I want to make. I didn't lose my leg. I do know where it is. It's just not with me anymore. So it takes a little bit more planning and some extra parts to get moving in the morning. But, you know, when we talk about the Department of War, you know, sometimes it's all about words have meaning. And we have one responsibility in the Department of War. That's to fight and win wars and carry American interests abroad while protecting our people and keeping them away from war here at home. I actually applaud this. I like going back to the historic footprint of this. It was after World War II, I believe 1947, post-World War II, that they changed the name in an effort to seem softer, kinder. You might say it was a little bit of political correctness prior to it being a thing. And again, with words having meaning, Department of War sets a tone. It clearly identifies what the responsibilities are. And now we've got to hold people accountable and prepare them to be the single best military on the planet. If you want peace through strength, I think that message is important.
Yeah, and peace through superior firepower, which this
yes,
president,
sir.
Yep, this president's backing the folks on the ground. And we appreciate hearing about that from you. Lieutenant Governor Jay Collins, always a pleasure. Look forward to talking to you again soon. Wow.
I loved his line about his lost leg. I mean, it's like, oh, he knows where it's at. He knows where he keeps it.
When you know what? Have a sense of humor about stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, it hasn't held him back.
Not a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It maybe it was even getting in the way.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Who knew?
No. God bless him and his family. Yeah. I like this guy.
Back on the topic of immigration, Border Czar Tom Homan sat down with traditional media outlet KNX Radio in Los Angeles and faced tough questions. Here's what that sounds like.
I'm glad the court agreed that we're doing things legally, we're doing things right, and every day we do this, it makes this country a little bit safer.
I covered the original court hearing where the Los Angeles U.S. District Judge said that the agents couldn't go after people based on the language or accents, where they were at the time of the arrest or being detained, based on who they're with or their clothing, that it was profiling. Is that going to be what will be happening going forward in Los Angeles?
No one's arresting anybody based on their looks. And I've even been quoted on that.
Are they detaining people based on clothing or language or accent?
There's a myriad of factors, right? It's a accumulation of factors. And it's not just one. You know, no one's getting arrested on their appearance. But their appearance could be one out of many, many factors. Taking the totality would give an officer reasonable suspicion. Again, the officers are trained, Fourth Amendment training. They're constantly retrained on it. I think they're doing the right thing. It's a gathering of factors, not just one factor, you know, several factors that lead them to reasonable suspicion. I think they're doing exactly what they're supposed to do according to the law.
The video that I've seen, agents seem to jump out of trucks and run quite aggressively toward anybody they can see, say, in a Home Depot parking lot.
Were you there during the surveillance phase of it?
So I wasn't there. I've only seen the videos.
So I'm telling you, there are surveillance operations where they surveil, you know, people, who picks them up, where they go. There are also, you know, who drops them off, what's those license plate. You know, there's law enforcement does their job, and there's a lot of intelligence gathering going on. So I'm not there. But I'm trusting the men and women are doing their intelligence gathering, they're doing their records checks, they're doing their surveillance, and to establish reasonable suspicion. I think that's what they're doing. And again, they're trained. I think they're doing the right thing.
A lot of people have had concerns about masked agents, sometimes not even wearing a uniform that says they're law enforcement, jumping out of these vehicles, in one case a moving truck, and doing these arrests or detainments here in Los Angeles. Are the masks a good look for law enforcement? I mean, is it a reflection of the relationship between law enforcement and the community?
I personally don't like masks, but I think because of the 1,000% increase in threats against ICE agents, I think because these groups are doxing, not just the agents, they're doxing their spouses and their children. They're trying to protect their families as best they can. So If the hateful rhetoric would decrease, maybe there wouldn't be a need for masks. But right now, with a 1,000% increase in assaults, with the doxing that I've seen, personally seen, against spouses and children of the agents, I support their decision to protect their families. At the same time, you got legislators out there in different states, and they're going to legislate that ICE can't wear a mask. I don't see any legislation on Antifa taking the mask away from Antifa or some of these protesters that turn violent. They go from protesters to criminals. Where's the requirement for them to take their mask off? So, look, I personally don't like the mask, but I understand the need for them because of the 1,000% increase in threats on ICE agents. So, unfortunate, but they have the right to protect their families.
I want to ask about DACA and Dreamers, DACA recipients, Dreamers. There are hundreds of thousands of them, many here in California. Are, in your opinion, are they here legally? Do they have to fear, again, assuming they've had a clean record, there's no criminal behavior, do DACA and or Dreamer recipients have to fear an ICE agent finding them and detaining them?
It depends on specific cases. I mean, every case is different.
But I tried to lay out a case there where you got somebody who has no criminal behavior.
Deferred action doesn't make them legal. It just defers action to a time later. So, you know, to call DACA recipients equal to those of resident aliens or U.S. citizens, it's just wrong. I mean, they've been given a deferred action, and it means exactly what it means. We're deferring any immigration removal for the time period. So, look, I'll leave it up to DOJ. DOJ's working on that, and I'm not going to get ahead of the president on what's coming in reference to that.
When was the last time you talked to Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass?
I talked to her one time. It's during the first few days of the operation in L.A.
How did that conversation go? Because that was back in June. That was when we had a lot of protests in about a 2-square-mile area of downtown Los Angeles. There was property damage and there was violence.
She called me to ask about what was going on. I told her exactly what was going on. And bottom line is that the false media story was, you know, we're out there doing, you know, racial profiling and area control. We were there. And I was there. We were serving criminal search warrants, criminal arrest warrants, part of an overarching criminal investigation into money laundering, tax evasion, and is a part of a bigger operation concerning cartel financing. These were criminal warrants. It wasn't an at-large operation. It was a criminal warrant, and the protesters showed up at the site of these warrants. Things got out of control. And, damage was at a federal building. We had not only aliens we arrested inside the federal building, but agents are at danger. So, you know, so I explained to her exactly what we're doing, how we're responding. And again, I thank President Trump for sending National Guard out there. I think they protected not only federal property, they protected federal officers. I think they helped, you know, bring peace to that town over the time period they were there. So she called and wanted to know what I knew, and I told her exactly what I knew because I was on the ground there.
Will there be the possibility that ICE agents will at least give local law enforcement a heads up that they're going to be doing some sort of operation in a certain area of Los Angeles? Because that has been a complaint from LAPD that, hey, we don't know that these agents are actually legitimate ICE agents. They're not wearing a uniform. And sometimes they get these calls, 911 calls, from panicked people who believe that they've just witnessed a kidnap.
Then I want someone to send me a picture of an ICE agent or Border Patrol agent where they don't have some sort of signage on their vest or their jackets where it doesn't say DHS, ICE, ERO, or CBP. Now, wear a mask.
Is that policy that they should always have a uniform on, identifying which agency they're with?
When you arrest, it's policy when you arrest somebody, you identify yourself. Yes, it is.
I remember when the restraining order was issued, it did seem like ICE immigration activity kind of tamped down a bit in Los Angeles. Will it be ramping back up?
Yes.
And to what degree?
The president made it clear we're going to prioritize sanctuary cities. They remain as sanctuary cities. So as we bring more resources and boots on the ground through our hiring, more officers will be deployed to sanctuary cities.
On birthright citizenship, the Constitution guarantees it. Do you agree with that?
That's not the way I read the Constitution.
Birthright citizenship is not a guarantee?
Look, I'm not an attorney. I'm not litigating it. My personal opinion, I don't think it does, but that's not my decision to make. That'd be the decision of the court.
From Border Czar to the Senate, hear next from Ted Cruz, who's asking the question on the minds of many. Who wants to protect criminals?
Senator, let me start by asking you this. I follow you on X, and I saw that you introduced the Clean DC Act, which is designed to repeal DC's 2022 law that lessened the penalties for violent crimes. Obviously, the president's right now trying to clean up DC. Can you tell us a little bit about the Clean DC Act?
Well, sure. As you know, D.C. crime has been out of control for a long time. Every year, D.C. is among the highest murder rates of any city in America. Last year, the homicide rate was 27 murders per 100,000 residents. Jeez. which is disastrous. It's worse than Bogota, Colombia. and we've seen... You know, we saw a White House staffer working for Doge who was violently assaulted by 10 juvenile assailants. Rand Paul had a staffer who was stabbed walking down the sidewalk.
Our own Congressman Estes had a staffer who was killed.
Yeah, and President Trump, there was an official in the first Trump administration who was sitting in his car at 5 p.m. on a public street, and he was shot and killed as well. And I mean, it's been out of control, and it was made worse in 2022. 2022, you obviously had George Floyd was killed, and then you had the Antifa and Black Lives Matter riots all over the country. And D.C., the mayor and city council reacted, as many left-wing politicians did, by going after the police and siding with violent criminals. And then they passed a law in D.C. in 2022 that lessened the penalties for violent crime, lessened the penalties for murder, lessened the penalties for carjacking, lessened the penalties for violent assault. And unsurprisingly, violent crime went up. We had Henry Cuellar, a Democrat congressman from Texas, who was carjacked in D.C. outside his apartment building, an apartment building five other congressmen live in, and he was carjacked there. And so the Clean D.C. Act is very simple. It reverses that 2022 law that lessened the penalty for violent crimes. And I will say, in the previous Congress, we passed a law reversing the 2022 act, and Joe Biden vetoed it. It was one of the very few vetoes he did his entire presidency, but the Democrats have decided when it comes to violent criminals, they're for them. So I've introduced this again, and we're going to fight to have a vote. And I want to put every House member and every senator on record. Do you stand with the murderers and rapists and carjackers, or do you stand with the innocent citizens who far too often have been their victims?
But, Senator, that's what we're seeing with Democrats. You've got Democrat mayors defending crime and illegals. You just over the Labor Day weekend, 54 were shot, 7 dead last weekend in Chicago. And when asked about it, the governor seemed to blame the president for it. I mean, this is what they're defending. This is who they're standing with.
It really is. It's bizarre. I do not understand why Democrats have decided that their party is the party of violent criminals. It is the party of illegal aliens. It is the party of Venezuelan gang members. You know, last week I traveled down to Latin America, and I went to El Salvador, Panama, and Mexico. And in El Salvador, I met with President Bukele, and I visited the CECOT prison, which is the prison he built for violent gang members and terrorists. And I got to tell you, in El Salvador, the record of success is extraordinary. Just a few years ago, El Salvador had the highest murder rate in the world. The murder rate in El Salvador was 100 homicides per 100,000 people. That means 1 in 1,000 Salvadorians were murdered every single year. President Bukele came in, and he began rounding up and arresting MS-13 and the 18th Street Barrio gangs and putting them in the CECOT prison. And the murder rate in El Salvador has dropped 98%. It is stunning. El Salvador is now one of the safest countries on earth. And it's exactly the same principle, that if you go after the bad guys, people are safer. And yet Democrats have decided, you know, they've decided this Maryland man, and they're a poster child for who they're for. And they're going to tell you, hey, you elect Democrats and you'll get more MS-13 gang members and human traffickers and drug traffickers in your neighborhood. I don't understand the political thinking behind that, but you're exactly right. It's where Democrat politicians are going.
We're talking with Texas Senator Ted Cruz. Senator, let me pivot a little bit. Again, it seems like this happens perpetually. Looks like, once again, we're at a risk of another Schumer shutdown.
Yep.
Obviously, this is not going to be the fault of you guys. It's not going to be a Republican problem. But if Chuck Schumer has his way, we may be facing another one. Where do you think the prospects lie?
Look, I think there's a very real prospect of a shutdown because I think Chuck Schumer wants a shutdown. And it's the Democrat Party today that they stand for one thing, which is hate and anger directed at Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And you know, Schumer is terrified of his left wing flank. He's terrified of AOC and the progressives in the party. And if Schumer wants to, he can force a shutdown, because to pass a continuing resolution funding the government in the Senate takes 60 votes. We only have 53 Republicans, which means we need at least 7 Democrats to pass it. And if Schumer decides, he can corral the Democrats, and listen, they obey orders well. And so I think there's a very real possibility that Schumer will force a shutdown just to show the crazies in his party, we hate Trump and we're fighting Trump. I hope that doesn't happen. And Republicans, we don't want it to happen. But Schumer might well decide to force a shutdown to show how tough he is.
Senator, I know you have a good relationship with the president. I know you speak to him regularly.
Yep.
Over the holiday, we had an interesting news cycle because the president, who's been working very diligently, took a couple days off. And lo and behold, the news story was, Donald Trump's dead. We laugh, but Governor Tim Walz told supporters to remain hopeful. Yep. That Trump would die soon. I mean, where have we come in our culture where Joy Reid can, doubt that he was shot, and the Democrat nominee for vice president laughs and hopes that he dies soon?
Now, this is crazy town, and you're exactly right. As you know, I do a podcast every week. Verdict with Ted Cruz, and I'm proud to be on KNSS every Saturday at 3 p.m. Y'all carry the podcast, Verdict with Ted Cruz. And I will tell you, the latest podcast, I focus on exactly this story, is one of the stories I talk about, which is the shocking news, Donald Trump is alive. Because social media and the left went crazy when 24 hours went by without him doing a press conference. Mind you, Joe Biden, I'm pretty sure they put him in a permanent vegetative state for months.
Yeah.
And the press didn't notice and didn't care, and yet... And I got to say, that Tim Walz video really was deranged because he's gleeful that he is openly rooting for the president of the United States to be dead. And he's saying someday, it's going to happen someday. And I got to say, that is twisted. Look, John, you and I, we didn't agree with Barack Obama. We didn't agree with Joe Biden. But I never rooted for either one of them to be dead, and
right.
I want the president of the United States to succeed. I want America to win, and it's the Democrats are so filled with hate that they are openly, yearning and gleeful at the prospect of the president dying.
Yeah, it's really sad. You're right. I mean, neither of us, I think, were happy with either of those two presidents' policies, but they were still our
right.
president, and we didn't want,
sure.
we didn't wish ill health on them. And it's a really sad state of affairs. I know I've got to let you run, but I do want to ask you, speaking of the holiday, and this may be a Schumer thing as well, but why hasn't the Senate been able to confirm more Trump appointees, particularly considering the recess appointment process? I'm just curious.
Yep.
That's got to frustrate you as well.
So it does. What we're seeing from the Democrats is unprecedented obstruction. And Schumer and the Democrats. So every president in modern times has had the majority of their nominees confirmed either by voice vote or unanimous consent. There are a lot of nominees that are non-controversial, and they get routinely, hundreds of them get confirmed. And,
mm-hmm.
and George W. Bush had them, and Obama had them, and Biden had them, and even the first Trump term they had them. Well, for the last 8 months, there have been zero nominees confirmed by voice vote or unanimous consent. What the Democrats have done is dragged out every confirmation. So the Senate has had more votes to confirm nominees than ever before in modern times. But Schumer and the Democrats are delaying and obstructing, and it is unprecedented. It's unacceptable. Now, here's the good news. Look, there's a natural give and take. If for every action, there is a reaction. And the way checks and balances operate is when one party abuses their power, the other party responds. And the Democrats' obstruction is so bad that I believe we're going to see the Senate change the rules to expedite confirmations to move more quickly. And in fact, I can tell you, we are this week, Senate Republicans are actively debating and working, and I am advocating vigorously for us to change the rules to move past this Democrat obstruction. But this is another manifestation of what we were talking about before, which is the Democrats today are the party of hate and anger, and that's why they're blocking even nominees that they don't object to on the merits, but they're trying to slow everything down, and we've got to push back, and I think we're going to.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Red Meat. Don't forget to smash that subscribe button for your favorite tasty assortment of conservative audio. And follow your local Odyssey talk station to get shows from these hosts delivered daily wherever you get your podcasts. Until next time, stay hungry.